Legislative and Public Affairs Subcommittee meeting, December 11, 2018, 6:30 p.m. Prior to starting the meeting, I'd like to read a copy of the Open Meetings Act. Nebraska Revised Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted in the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the director will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Thank you. Prior to quorum calls, and similarly, I mean, Rick Lee is not here. I ask John Conley to sit in. Quorum call.
Fowler.
Here.
Brunwell.
Here.
Jeff.
Here.
John Conley.
Here.
And Chairperson.
Here. Need a motion to adopt the agenda.
So moved.
Second. Motion is second. Any questions? Roll call.
Brunwell.
Yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy. Excuse me. John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Hi. I have proof of publication of tonight's subcommittee meeting. It's being filed in my report. Item number six, review and recommendation on 2019 pay program administrative manual. Jean Tate.
Good evening. Last December, the Papio Missouri River NRD Board of Directors approved the pay program administration manual for 2018. The 2018 manual incorporated changes to the salary structure and midpoints as recommended and supported by the 2017 market analysis, which was conducted by Silverstone Group. Silverstone's annual compensation planning bulletin recommends a 2% increase to the base pay structure as this year's only recommended change. This is consistent with prior year updates to the district's pay program in off years when a market analysis is conducted. A highlighted version of the proposed 2019 manual is in your book under attachment six. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommends to the board that the proposed amendments to the pay program administration manual for 2019 be adopted and incorporated in the district's policy manual. And I'd be happy to entertain any questions you may have.
First, does the public hear? Anyone here from the public wish to speak to this item? Not hearing directors.
I move approval of staff recommendation.
Got a motion?
I'll second.
And a second. Any other comments?
I had a question. Is this universally accepted by the employees well, the new pay scale and this issue? What's the employee response to this pay scale?
Well, I visited all the field offices a couple weeks ago and let them know that the 2% recommended change was coming, and I didn't hear any negative feedback.
They, of course, would want more. But
right. And it doesn't mean that they're going to get just a 2%
right.
pay increase. If you take a look at the pay grade that's on the board, those are the midpoints that increase by 2%. Based on where an employee falls with their percentage, they could range anywhere between 2 to 3.5%. So even though it's across the board 2%, some employees get the majority of employees get between 2, 2.5%.
The average increase was 3%.
The higher 3% would be based on what?
Merit
yep. by their supervisors.
Would yep. Be?
And so the only way to move up from a 5 to 6 would be what? How would you move up in this?
If your job responsibilities changed, or if you entered a new position that had a higher grade.
What if somebody was working the same job as somebody else, but they're not making the same? Is it because they have different responsibilities, or just one of them's been there longer?
Typically longevity.
The longevity issue. There's still a longevity issue that
yes.
goes on here? All right, thank you.
Any other questions?
Just a quick one. You said the only move is the 2% based on the mid grade. It's not moving up the maximum.
When we increase, when these grade pay grade points increase by 2%, mm-hmm. An individual's percentage to their midpoint will drop by 2%. So the overall impact is pretty minimal. There's only 7 employees that's going to get a 0.5% increase based on the change in this chart.
Any other questions?
Is this for everyone across the board? Is there, so there's nobody left out of the pay raise?
That's correct.
Okay.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Jeff.
Yes.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Brunwald.
No.
And Chairperson.
Aye. Thank you, Dean. Well, I guess we have next. Item number 7, review and recommendation on update for the district's employee handbook.
Attached for your review and consideration are proposed changes to the PAPIO NRD's employee handbook, and it's in a red line version in your book. Changes include housekeeping to bad weather clothing, vehicle use policy, vacation leave, sick leave, travel and expense accounts, and employee verification acknowledgement forms. Upon the board's approval, the updated employee handbook will be distributed to all district employees for individual verification and acknowledgement. And our recommendation is that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the proposed amended language to the employee handbook be approved and incorporated to the district's policy manual. Again, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
First, anyone in the public who wishes to speak to this item? Not seeing anyone. Directors?
I have a couple quick ones. On the sick leave, it says we're removing the general manager's authority to permit employees to use sick leave. Who's doing it now, then, if the general manager doesn't do it?
The supervisor can approve sick leave up to 3 days. Anything that exceeds the 3 days requires upper management approval unless it's covered by FMLA.
Is that stated in the manual, the policy? Is that stated in the policy manual? That way?
It's on page 22.
Okay, 22.
And it's just, the strikeout is the general manager has the authority in his discretion to permit an employee to use sick leave to tend to the needs of his or her immediate family.
Okay.
So that's the strikeout on that.
Okay. The other quick question, vehicle use policy, are there employees now that use company vehicles on their own personal time?
No, they would be using them for if they went home and they bring them back, so they keep them at home. And typically those are employees that have off-duty hours if they go to meetings late, if they go out of town a lot, if they have emergency responsibilities, things like that. Every time that an employee, either that position changes or a new incumbent takes that, we review their job duties to make sure they still need that vehicle. And so we're eliminating those as that turns out. For example, Zach's losing his next.
Why would Zach lose his?
He's voluntarily giving his up. It's less, more of a hassle for him to do it that way. So.
can Zach then take track of his hours and turn them in then? Or his miles?
If he had to do mileage, if he used his own vehicle for mileage, then he would turn that in.
So if Zach drives up to Dakota City, he gets reimbursed.
Or he'd come back and use a district vehicle to do that.
Got it.
But if there was an emergency situation where he had to go straight from home to there, then he would charge his mileage.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Mark?
Real quick. USDA NRCS DC. What does DC stand for?
District Conservationist.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Do we have a motion?
John
Conley. Wait, hold on. Was there a motion? No, I guess.
I move approval of staff recommendation.
I'll second.
Second. Roll call.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Brunwald.
Yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Aye. I think it's your turn.
All right. We'll hop directly into mine. I'd like to call to order the PAPIO PL 566 Work Plan Ad Hoc Consultant Selection Subcommittees. Notification of Open Meetings Act has already been covered by Director Conley. It's posted in the back. Form call.
Bradley.
Here.
Jack.
Here.
Clue.
Here.
Teaser.
Here.
Chairperson.
Here. Adoption of agenda.
So moved. Second.
Jack.
Yes.
Clue.
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. I have proof of application affidavit in front of me here. Become part of the record. Item 6, review and recommendation on a professional services contract with Fira Engineering. Amanda Grant.
Hey, good evening. Well, on November 1st, we
PAC subcommittee selected FIRA Engineering to negotiate a contract for the PL 566 work plan update, and that was for 6 grade stabilization structures in the Papio Creek watershed. And it's a plan that we've had around since the 60s with the NRCS. So since that time, we've been working together on a scope, and that was attached on the website for you. That's our standard EJ-CDC professional services contract. And included in there was a more detailed scope and task description with hours and fee for the work. And there's a lot of detail in that. But basically, the project includes project management over the duration of the plan update. And then a lot of the tasks are really data collection for the watershed. So we just have a lot of updating to do because the plan is pretty old. So we have a lot of environmental, soils, all kinds of data to collect. So that was one of the bigger pieces. And then they're going to develop and analyze alternatives for these 6 sites, complete the environmental assessment. And then the other major categories are coordination with agencies. You can imagine there's a lot of coordination. There's also coordination with the 7th site, because the 7th site of this work plan is funded through the RCPP program, which is the WP1. And so we wanted to make sure there was enough coordination in there. And then preliminary design and cost estimates for those sites. So the not-to-exceed fee proposed by FIRA is $559,822. And if you remember, we received a grant from the NRCS to cover $560,000. So we were really trying to stay within that number, and we did. The other, I mentioned the WP1 site, but the other thing that's good about this is FIRA has partnered with EA as they presented, and EA is the sub to Olson for the RCPP WP1, which is that 7th site, so I expect this to go very smoothly. So hopefully we'll have the work plan update in about a year's time. And if there's any questions on the contract, happy to answer that.
Move with staff recommendation.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Before doing any further, anybody from the audience like to speak on this matter? And directors.
Yes, sir. I had a question, Amanda. In Exhibit C on page 1, it talked about the compensation package and so forth. One was the study and the report phase was $463,238, and the preliminary design was $96,584, which brought it up to that $559. But then the final design phase, it had nothing listed for that. So what happens when they get to the final design phase?
So for this particular grant from the NRCS, this takes us through the work plan update, which is only through a preliminary design.
Right.
So assuming this all works and gets approved, we would apply for more federal money to do final design and construction.
And if there is no federal money?
Then that's something we consider, you know, and the board would approve. You know, we have not gone after these on our own for a while. I think Midland Lake and Shadow Lake, Midland Lake was a PL 566 site mm-hmm. that we did a number of years ago. But I think it would just be something to consider. Certainly the federal money is a big player in this.
There's no way to know how much final design phase costs would be?
Well, we did. And I guess we worked with NRCS when we put together this grant for the first phase on what the other phases might cost
right.
all the way through construction, because we want them to plan, and they want to plan for us to finish this. Their intent is not for us to do this update and then just leave right. it. In total, for preliminary, final, and construction, we estimated about $17 million to do this.
These 6 projects total, that with the construction.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Yeah, I mean, I supported it on the basis that it would be federally funded primarily, and we wouldn't have to pick in a lot of money that we don't necessarily. So.
It is. And the program itself, the 566, so if we should get federal money down the line, the federal money comes and it follows the same guidelines as that PL 566, which pays 100% of engineering and construction and land rights and easements. All of that is up to the sponsor. So that's how the division.
Do you know at what point the landowners are informed of this? Have they been informed? Have they been, anybody talked to them yet?
No. These are sites that have been around for a long time,
right.
but we have not. We likely will not unless we need to do some, you know, investigation on the property. It's still just a ways out on whether we get federal funding and whether we'd really be building these.
Thank you.
Amanda, what's the typical type of construction that's envisioned with this if it goes forward?
So a lot of these have been kind of small, like pond dams. I mean, they're basically dam embankments, but they just don't, they're not the high hazard big dams that we, you know, have out here, and that they're much smaller. But those are very, they're expensive. And so we're looking at that with the alternatives. We're going to look at some pure grade stabilization, whether that could be a dam embankment with some pooled water behind it. It could be more of like a weir sheet pile or a rock structure that just helps maintain the grades in the channel and doesn't maybe, you know, and that could be a landowner issue too. If we don't have someone that wants to do that type of embankment, maybe we do more of a, you know, just a straight stabilization to get that channel with like something smaller, like a, yeah, sheet pile, rock check.
Thank you.
Director Brown. I was just wondering if any of these will be big enough to hold, you know, fish for public access, fishing or anything.
We have some that are public access, and you may want to, I don't know if you want to talk there. They're not always.
Are typically, these PL5.
Any other directors?
These smaller dams, what's the average size? What are we talking? You say they're smaller.
You know, they may be like 15 to 20 acres of water or smaller, would you say?
Smaller.
I'm trying to think of ones that we have. There's a number of them around, some in Sarpy County. They're kind of like neighborhood ponds. Mm-hmm. This is really
are there any special requirements for them if you're just going to put in a small one, like in your base or anything, or you just find a basin and we just build them there?
They would be built to NRCS standards, which is, you know, dam embankment standards.
All right. Any other directors? We have a motion and a second. Roll call.
Hey, Klug?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. And that concludes me. Don Conley? Your committee.
You're okay. Right. I was waiting for the chairman to call him. Hey, I'm calling to order the programs, projects, and operations. We don't need to do that, do we? Meeting is called to order. A copy of the Open Meetings Act is posted at the rear of the room. And with that, quorum call, please.
Here.
Robert?
Yes.
Bruce?
Here.
Caesar?
Yes.
Here. Next item is the adoption of the agenda.
So move.
Second.
Roll call.
Fowler?
Yes.
Luke?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Yes. I have here an affidavit of proof of publication, which will become part of our permanent records. Now moving to item 6, review and recommendation on the agreement with Mike and Lori Walker for the Washington County Rural Water System Surfside Club Water Main Extension Project. Zach Nelson.
Good evening. If you are all familiar with the Surfside Club restaurant, it is just north of MP Dodge Park on the Missouri River. It gets quite a bit of traffic in the summer from boaters, as well as traffic along North River Road. Currently, the restaurant has no clean potable water source, so as a result, they truck water in from MUD, which is extremely expensive. Earlier this spring and early summer, the owners of Surfside, Mike and Lori Walker, approached me about extending a rural water main to serve the property. They are too far north for MUD to serve them, as well as MUD has a little bit stricter specifications as far as line diameter size. So I started working with Mike and Lori. Kind of a little bit of background on how we do things. Similar to MUD, We require a landowner or developer to pay 100% of the cost of a water main extension. The reason for that is the payback period is it's not a lucrative business, so we can't afford to prospectively put water mains out there hoping people connect on. So we took a deposit from the Walkers, hired HDR to design the water main. It's a 4-inch diameter main, so it's roughly 10,000 linear feet, all kind of weaving in along the county roads there. Normally, when we work with a private developer, we give the developer a set of specifications. They go out, bid the work, hire the contractor. We just simply go out and monitor it, make sure it's installed per specifications, and then we take it over. The Walkers are a unique situation since they're not in the business of developing, their landowner. So we kind of assisted in that process. And what we did was bid the work out to solicit subcontract numbers, as well as allow the Walkers to provide a bid as well. They have a number of subcontractor acquaintances and just people that do work on their other properties. So we allowed them the opportunity to bid. They were the low bidder on the project. So over the course of the last few weeks, my staff and I have talked with the subs that they plan on using. With a 4-inch diameter main, it's a pretty simple process. They have a boring subcontractor, a contractor that fuses the pipe together, and then a plumber that makes connections at a couple of gate valves and hydrants. It's pretty easy work. So the agenda item tonight is to make a review and recommendation on an agreement between the Walkers and the district that would require the Walkers to install the water main per our specifications, essentially pay for 100% of that cost, and then warranty that water main for 5 years. And then should people connect on to the water main over the course of the next 20 years, they would be entitled to a rebate for a portion of that connection for customer. And it's similar how we do a lot of.
Move a staff recommendation.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak to this? Directors? Director Fowler.
Zach, any big risk here on the district side house that you could see?
The biggest risk would be is, you know, if they're not installing it per specifications, my staff will be out on site making sure that it meets our specifications. Really, with this type of work, it's such a small diameter main at 4-inch. They're going with a technology called HDP where they actually fuse the pipe together. It takes two sticks of pipe, melts it together. It creates a really strong bond. Your weak points are pretty much wherever you have a valve or a hydrant. So I think this little stretch of line has like 3 or 4 valves, 2 hydrants, so pretty minimal weak points. And what we're doing is we're collecting a deposit from the Walkers in addition to, you know, they're performing the work. But let's say they get stuck along the way, there's a hole in the ground and we need to go fill it in ourselves. That deposit kind of covers our basis to clean up a mess if we need to cover pipe.
Does that water also feeds the business Surfside, but yep. It does also feed the marina?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes, John.
What happens, are they going to have to be bonded in some way? Because if you get into this project so far, all of a sudden they come up and say, well, we have any more money or something happened, we can't pay. What's our responsibility to that?
Yeah, so they will have, with their respective subcontractors, they'll have contracts directly with them. So let's say they can't pay. The district wouldn't be liable. Their subcontractors would then file a lawsuit against Surfside LLC. But as far as that general liability insurance, a lot of that, the same insurance requirements that we provide in our specifications for a normal contractor bidding our work, that Walkers have to provide us with those certificates.
Okay.
And we've already kind of talked to Washington County about kind of babysitting this area when work's going.
Zach, I've got a couple questions from you. One, do you collect the full value of the project before they start work?
In this particular instance, since they're performing the work themselves, we will not. We'll collect a $25,000 deposit, which is essentially enough to cover the whole, but the contract's directly between them and the contractor.
Okay. What about the route for the pipeline? Are you going to try at all to put it into any private right-of-way so you don't get into relocation expense?
Where we could, We've gotten, well, we're in the process of getting easements to put in a private property. There's a few areas where it's pretty much like going through the middle of a ravine where it has to be up against the county road. I talked to Washington County, and it's not feasible for them to ever pave that road or do any major work on it. So we do have a little bit of risk there being the right-of-way, but Washington County doesn't have any plans of paving that.
Well, the 4-inch pipe is not a big risk anyway.
Correct. For reference sake, too, my staff in Dakota County, we just installed 2 miles of this type of water main ourselves. So if we ever really got in a pinch, we had to move it ourselves, we could. It's just not, in this case, it's not feasible for my guys to drive down. We didn't exactly volunteer to do the work ourselves.
Yes, Director Thompson.
Where's the meter on this?
It is at, so there's a master meter vault at the edge of their property. So if you're familiar with, like, North River Road,
yeah,
at the very end, it's pretty much up by the sign, and then they have a private line from the sign down to the marina.
So it hooks in the private line.
Yeah, so there's roughly, I think it's from the sign down to their property, probably 1,500 feet. That's their responsibility.
I'd like to piggyback on Jim's question there. How many buildings will you allow to serve off of a single meter? As opposed to most places, we require a meter for a customer. They've got multiple businesses in there besides a restaurant, don't they?
Right now, surprisingly, their demand's pretty low. They have the restaurant itself, and then they have future plans for additional restrooms along the river, but they're not. I don't recall the number of fixture units off the top of my head, but the demand wasn't pretty high. And they aren't allowed to have a fire suppression system because we, on a 4-inch line, we don't have the capacity to provide it.
I was thinking about other businesses connecting onto that and becoming their subcontractor.
We wouldn't allow that because then they would be the health department considered them a public water system, and if they're selling other people water.
I just wanted you to say that. That's good.
Yeah, that's a whole other paperwork nightmare for them, which I'm sure they'll
think. Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Kaiser?
Yes.
Yes. Now moving ahead to item 7 is review and recommendation on Amendment 4 to professional service contract with HDR Engineering for Zirinsky Basin 2. Amanda Grant, please.
Can we go to the map? So for your consideration this evening is Amendment 4 to the professional services contract with HDR. So before someone else says it, there's a lot of amendments, and so I'm going to do my best to explain what's going on here. Also, Lori Koratzuk with HDR is here as well. The first thing, and probably the largest item in this amendment, is in an attempt not to bring amendments back, we put the final design and the construction administration together in one amendment. We usually split those out, but we felt like we had a good handle on it at the time. Of course, that didn't work out so well for us. By the time we made it through final design and permitting and the timing of everything, the construction administration is going to need to go on 6 months longer than we had initially thought. And kind of just part of the course with this project, it's just taking a little longer. So we have 6 more months of project management, construction, observation, administration, and SWIP, which is inspection of all the erosion and sediment control features on the site. We have to carry that on for the duration of the project, too. So that's one of the big items in the amendment. Another item is, while they were installing the drawdown pipe through this area, as you know, we had a really wet year, and the groundwater is high there anyway. And it was just one thing after another. And the specs we had, it wasn't working to get the groundwater out of the way so that they could get the drawdown pipe in, so that they could get the embankment in. So we did ask HDR to provide a lot more technical assistance at that time. They had their geotechs out there quite a bit helping come up with a solution and do some of that work. And then the other things are really a product. I know we've talked about this project a lot. If you can see all the houses around it, we've had a discussion on an amendment that had to do with some neighbors and some changes that we're making to fit in with the adjacent development. Again, a couple of fairly minor things, but still things that cost money. We had some access drives we had planned to come off of George B. Lake, but honestly, with this roundabout and sidewalk and landscaping and the grades through there, we found it's going to be much easier to come in off of this road on 205th up here. So that requires a little more survey and a little more design work, but in the end, that will be a cost savings in the construction. The road's shorter, and it's less work to build that road. So we will eventually see some benefit on the construction side, but for right now, we have to do some survey and design for those changes. I think that's about it. The detailed amendment was provided. If there's any questions, I'll try to answer them. And again, Lori Kretzuk's here too. Oh, I should mention them. It's at $280,431. Again, that's a not to exceed amount. So we want to make sure we cover that whole construction period with all those items I mentioned, but if it's not needed, that would not be charged. And that brings the total contract amount to $1,723,991 from preliminary design through the end.
Chair and entertain a motion on this item.
I'll motion for staff recommendation.
Second. And we have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak to this item? Seeing none, directors. Director Jack.
I had a quick question. When is the end in sight for the whole thing?
It is. Substantial completion is December of 2019.
Okay. And then we'll be done with it? All right, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Easer?
Yes.
Ed Conway?
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
Blue?
Yes.
Easer? Yes. The next item is Eric Williams, is Thomas Creek Improvements Phase 1, an interlocal agreement with the City of Omaha.
Good evening, everyone. In April of this year, during the normal cost share applications, we reviewed and approved a project under the Urban Drainage Way Program for Thomas Creek, which is in the northeast part of Omaha.
And Philip, you get the map?
I can't remember. I think it's the first page of the attachments. There you go. So you can see that it's just downstream. Thomas Creek is flowing from the northwest, from the upper left, down to the southeast, and it connects into the Little Papio Creek, just downstream of 680 and near Ida Street. And we approved this project at the time with a total amount of funding, $780,000, to be spread over 3 years. Some preliminary work had been done at that time. 319 funding had been applied for and was received. Environmental trust funding was applied for but not received. And so that put them eligible for level 2 cost share funding from the NRD. And the project is expected to take about 3 years. And so in those situations, in order to have the local partner have confidence that they can move forward with the design and eventually the construction, we signed an interlocal agreement saying that we won't re-review and potentially not fund the project after they've started with some of the significant work. So what we have is an interlocal agreement to cover 3 years of funding, a lower amount in the first year, $80,000 while they're doing some of the design work, and then $350,000 in each of the next two fiscal years during the time when the construction would be happening, with a maximum at that $780,000 that we talked about back in April. And the project is, there's about three or four main objectives here. There are, I believe, two different exposed sanitary sewers in this location. There are a couple of gas lines that are being threatened. The adjacent businesses see some flooding. There's quite a bit of bank erosion. So it's kind of comprehensive work here in terms of channel stability, water quality improvements, and improvements to the businesses next door. The interviews for the design contract were yesterday afternoon. Three firms were interviewed, and I think we'll find out later this week. I think they're going to have a great designer on board, and so we're looking forward to them moving ahead with the design contract and getting the project moving. So the recommendation is to authorize approval of the interlocal on our side, and it has been reviewed by City of Omaha Legal, and then we'll turn it over to them for their approval through their city council.
Move the staff recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? I've got a question on this. This is a flat contribution to the project, not a percentage.
It's bound by both, so it's a 60%. So if the project cost is lower than what is originally expected, then there would be a decrease in our contribution based on the actual expenditure. But if the amount exceeds what we had authorized, then we would not exceed the total $780,000.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
Luke?
Yes.
Beezer?
Yes. Yes. Then moving on to item 9 is review and recommendation on amendments to the district policy manual. Marlon Peterman, please.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. We have a memorandum in front of you that outlines the proposed policy manual changes. This is something we normally do about this time of year, looking at things throughout the year may need to be updated in your policy manual. There are kind of two sections to your policy manual, and the first one, maybe page up just a hair, Bill, or the other way, I'm sorry, page down. Yeah, we have the policies in 1 through 16. You can kind of look at these as chapters 1 through 16. And those are things that deal with the directors and staff and purchasing and a lot of the policies that set up how the district operates. The remainder of the policies then here are 17 through 22, chapter 17 through 22. And those are basically the programs and projects of the district. And the reason I point that out is these first section of policies 1 through 16, chapters 1 through 16, as you may recall, are need to lay over for a month. In other words, they are voted on to be approved and then lay over for a month for consideration by the board. The other policies, 17 through 22, that are just the programs and projects of the district, would not lay over. They, if you adopted something tonight, they would be, and then approved by the board Thursday, they would be automatically incorporated. So with that little background, the changes that we're recommending for this year, you could page down a little again, is, I'll just look up on that. The policy 2.7 is a new policy. And the purpose of this policy is to clarify when director terms begin and end. You didn't really have a policy there. What it says basically is your term begins as a director when you're sworn in, and it ends at the end of the four-year term, December 31st, at the end of 4 years. So it would define that as the term of the director. Pretty simple change there, but that would be in that section of under director. The next set of policies that are being proposed to be changed jumps all the way to chapter 15 and deal with the purchasing policies in these chapters. The first one, A, as I have listed here, is that management's recommending that the management's authority to contract for construction, professional services, and personal property would increase from $30,000, a maximum of $30,000, to $50,000. And maybe I'll just kind of go through these, and then we can go back and discuss them. I'll kind of describe them in general. The second item, B, would relate to professional services, engineering services, and would provide that management's maximum authority to do change orders for professional services up to 10% of the contracted amount would increase from $30,000 to $50,000. So, in other words, if there was a contract for $100,000 to do professional services, currently management's authority is to can make change orders to that professional contract. That's also allowed under construction contracts. But a change to 10% of the contract amount. So in an example of a $100,000 contract, changing to 10% would only be $10,000 and wouldn't come to this limit. But if we had $1 million contract for engineering, 10% of that would be $100,000. So the 10% in that case wouldn't govern. It would be the maximum of $50,000 change. Currently, it's 30. The item C is competitive bidding limits, and this sets basically the floors as to when one can go and get the level of advertisement that that has to be done. Exempt below 5,000 means basically that no bids would be required for a purchase under 5,000. The informal bids, in other words, an informal go informally, contact three suppliers and get bids from them, is from 5 to 50,000. And formal competitive bidding, in other words, advertising in a newspaper and through our website to get bidding on these services. This, by the way, is the current policy. These numbers are the current policy of the board. The 5,000 is a lower level, no bids. 5 to 50,000 informal bids, over 50,000 formal competitive bids. So that's just wanted to point out, we're not recommending that change. We're just wanted to show that here. Also wanted to show item D here again. That is, we're saying that remain as the policy. That bid bonds and performance bonds on projects would be required at $50,000. In other words, anything that costs more than $50,000 would require a bid bond or a performance bond. That's current policy as well. I might note those policies, the current policy that I'm just kind of mentioning here, were adopted 6 years ago when we brought some policy changes to you. And what we're really kind of showing here is that when we made those recommendations, what we're recommending tonight is exactly what we recommended then. And that is that these maximum management authorities be $50,000 for professional services and for construction services, and that this increase in change orders be $50,000 instead of $30,000. The board, in its wisdom, didn't choose to agree with all our recommendations 5 years ago. So, deja vu, though, we're coming back and saying we think those changes that were recommended six years ago, were good ones, and certainly costs have gone up in this last 6 years. And so we believe that those should be increased to those levels. And you can see a little pattern here, the fives. Sometimes it's a little confusing to staff. And, well, is this a $50,000 policy item or a $30,000 policy item? And I'm not saying that's terribly confusing, but it can be from time to time as to what, you know, what really are the limits and authorities of management based on your policy. Well, maybe we can come back and discuss that a little further. That's the changes in the purchasing. The one thing we have done, item E here also that we're outlining in the policy changes, we're using kind of maybe current systems, and we're basically advertising through our website on for any bids. We don't send them out to contractors anymore. We send them to engineering firms. We may send some, but basically the requirement is for all contractors and engineering firms, etc., suppliers, to register with us. And they're on our website. If we are going out to bids on something, we notify them by a notice from the website, and then they are notified in that way rather than through a mailing. We do also, we though, by the way, do retain the fact that there is a notification in the World Herald as well. So there are two ways there, one on the website and one through the World Herald. So that's kind of the changes we're recommending in policies. Going in 1 through 16. Going to policies 17 through 24, if you page down, Bill. The changes we're making here are in a few of the programs, and really these are more housekeeping things than anything, but 17.2 is a Wild Nebraska Habitat program where we provide a cost share for habitat rest development, grass seeding, tree planting, things like that. And it was funded and supported by the Nebraska Game and Parks Commission. They've terminated that program, so we're recommending that we terminate that program because that cost share from Game and Parks is no longer available. 17.5, Information Education Program. There's some changes here that reflect kind of the times, and by the times I mean social media a great deal, and providing a new direction for reaching out and informing the public of our natural resource issues. And so there are some major changes in our education information program. 17.16 is the Urban Stormwater Program. This is a cost share. This is a program that outlines our PAPIO partnership that we have with the communities in the PAPIO basin. And we had not noticed that we had not included the southern Sarpy watershed, which is the one over the hill in the southern half of Sarpy County, and working with those communities on policies for development in the southern Sarpy watershed. And so it's just incorporated wording to incorporate that southern Sarpy watershed partnership into the policy manual. 1730 is floodplain purchase program. This previously was named Floodway. What did I do? Did I do that? Help me out. Yeah. Sorry. There we go. Whoop. Move. Not quite that. There you go. 1730, this was called Floodway Purchase Program, and it was labeled as buyouts in the floodway. Actually, your policy has been to kind of expand that some and do purchases in both the floodplain and the floodway. And so we thought we should direct that more to what your actions really have been and what your practice is, and call this the floodplain rather than floodway purchase program. Although there is a statement in there that their priority would be given to floodway purchases. 1739 is the program for mapping assistance, and here it did state in there that any applicants, like a city that wanted floodplain mapping and so on assistance, that they had to apply for state and federal cost share funding. That funding is pretty limited these days, and we don't think it should be a requirement any longer of them to make that application because there just really aren't funds available. So those are the kind of housekeeping changes in our program. District policies 18-18-5 for projects. Those projects are basically all of our things from all the way from these reservoir sites you hear Pigeon Jones projects, our PAPIO projects, our Western Sarpy Levee projects, our Offutt Levee projects, all those project listings. Here we We just added the six new reservoirs that we have 60% plans done on, and you bought quite a bit of right-of-way on a number of those sites already. And so it's just incorporating those six sites into the policy manual. So that's kind of a housekeeping measure as well. So our bottom line recommendation is, as stated here, that the board adopt the proposed amendments to those policies 17 and 18, in Chapter 17 and 18, and that they be approved. And then furthermore, we just included it all in one motion here, that the board approve the amendments to policy 2.7 and in Chapter 15, those purchasing policies, that they be tabled for consideration at the next board meeting following this. So that's a little lengthy discussion. Are there any questions on those recommendations?
Let's get a motion on the floor, and then we'll discuss. Can I get a motion, please? We have a motion for staff recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
I have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Director Klug.
A quick question. The increase from the 30 to the 50, has there been any time since 2012 when we put this in place that $30,000 limit has prevented staff or the district from doing what it needed to do in a timely manner to serve the public?
Yes, there are. And maybe I might ask for a little help here. Zach Martin, I don't think he's here tonight, but Martin and Zach do a lot of this contracting in this area.
Okay.
So maybe I'll let Zach give you some ideas here.
So at our staff meeting a month ago, I volunteered to be kind of the whipping boy on this topic. And obviously, coming from my background, in a perfect world, that threshold would even be higher just because of sometimes there's only so much you can do. And a lot of what Martin and I do, the maintenance items like replacing a long stretch of sidewalk, replacing riprap, very repetitive, non-technical work to where a lot of times we struggle getting contractors to bid it. It's the perfect type of work where a contractor says, oh, this mega project of mine got pushed 2 months. I have a couple weeks that I need fill-in work to do. So I think being able to have that flexibility to all of a sudden we get a break in weather, call up some subs and say, hey, guys, meet me out here. You know, you got 2 days. Give me some bids. Let's hammer out this work and get it done. That's the thing. It's a lot of the items, you know, we have so many networks of trails, so many networks of ditches to maintain. It's mainly to get those little maintenance tasks done to move that threshold up. It's very rarely that we can call and get a sub mobilized for under $50,000.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Director Bradley, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wanting to know, Marlon or anybody, the Wild Nebraska Habitat Program, what happened to that? Did they replace it or why?
They just have not supported it. I'm not sure. And it's actually been a couple of years now that that's not been available. I think they've gone to other funding priorities. It doesn't mean we aren't planning pollinator habitat and other habitat out there, et cetera, you know, through our other programs. It just is we aren't having any support from the state.
Now,
and
I don't know if this is more for them to let us know, but perhaps was it cuts from the state? On the game and parks where they had to
I think we've heard a
make
lot
their
of
tough decisions.
Yeah, they've you know, the last few years we've heard a lot about their maintenance needs and that they are so far behind. And you know, I think they needed to cut something is my guess. And so this was one of the things.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Director Conley.
Yeah, as you were making the statements about those first two, I was trying to remember back 6 years ago. Was the same kind of information provided 6 years ago with regards to why you wanted to change?
It was very similar. I think one of the things we did 6 years ago is we had a little analysis on cost of living increases over there because the original amounts were established back when the board adopted policies in 1986. Okay. And so they hadn't been changed for a long, long time. And so there was some justification we added in there, but it was, you know, the similar sort of things. But we did have a little bit additional information on cost of living increase and how actually you can just look at the limit before was 20,000, and you know, through cost of living CPI indexes, you know, it probably should be more like, I don't know, I think it's 60,000 to 80,000 that we really could justify. So your dollar just doesn't buy as much today.
But what I was kind of curious, because if it happened 6 years ago and you brought forth the same argument that it should go to 30 to 50 and the board turned it down, basically, but what was the basis of the board basically turning it down, since you provided more information as to why it should have been changed?
Wisdom of the board. I don't know.
I think maybe just some thought, maybe that was too much at the time.
But the only reason I asked that, Mark, is that if there was more information provided to change it, and I assume that it was some comment from the board based on the information provided, that they didn't think it justified going 30, 50. And so now we come back 6 years later, and basically the same is, and the argument is that there's been a lot of changes in the CPI. So.
I think it was just the comfort level of the board at that time. I mean, I don't know if there was any criticism. I mean, it's just that's what they were coming up with.
Oh, I see.
I mean, I don't remember, but yeah.
For what it's worth, Douglas County's threshold is 50,000 currently that they can award. If I had to guess, we're kind of catching up to other entities, and then over the course of the next 5 years, you'll see everyone else raise their thresholds and we'll catch up.
Are we done with comments? Anybody else?
I got one more. Can you explain the 50? Is it involve equipment also or not? Like, you need a new pickup?
No.
You can buy a pickup.
Not well,
that's what I'm unclear about this, I guess.
It would, because that's considered a personal property, so it would include equipment.
Okay. So you could actually buy equipment up to 50,000 without any board approval whatsoever?
Well, we report all of these. Yeah, but it wouldn't take prior board approval.
Be after the fact.
Yeah, we report all of them after.
Right,
the fact.
But with equipment, we have a process that we bring equipment that we want to purchase in the year to the board for approval, and then if budget allows. So unless it's an emergency, we're not going to run out and buy a pickup without board approval.
Right.
I mean, unless something occurred where you needed,
you had to have it.
Yeah, a back or something to that. Most of the time it'd be rentals, but we're not going to go out and buy a truck with no approval. So,
Director Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to 17.2, and I just wanted to know if any way we can stay involved just by ourselves. Would that be?
I can speak for example, pollinator habitat. We're working with the Bee Club and a bunch of other type of organizations, and the Pheasants Forever, and so there's other organizations that have, I think, surpassed a little bit what Game and Parks has the funding for, has the programs for, and so we're working with them. Because Game and Parks, it hurts because they don't have the funds to do that, but it, like Marlon said, we haven't stopped. We just look for different avenues and different partnerships, and so it continues to go. It's not stopping anything. So.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing that, roll call on the motion, please.
Howard?
Yes.
Luke?
Yes.
Beezer?
Yes.
Aye. Yes, and that concludes our agenda.
The time is 7:29. Does anybody need to take a short break? Okay, let's go. Time is 7:29. We'll call the meeting of the FEL subcommittee to order. Notification of the Open Meeting Act is posted in the rear, as was stated earlier. With that, quorum call.
Bradley?
Here.
Luke?
Here.
John Conley?
Here.
Lee?
Here.
And Sherpa?
Here.
Adoption agenda.
So moved.
Second? Someone? Did I see a second?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call.
Luke?
Yes.
John Conley?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
And
Jim? I have before me proof of publication of this meeting. Moving on to agenda item 6, review the recommendation of fiscal year 2018 audit, Terry Fry and Jane Garland, Bergen KDB, formerly HSMC Verizon. Good evening.
Good evening.
You screwed me up on your name.
Well, I'll address that in a moment. Gary, do you want to say anything first? All right, well, good evening. Thanks for having me this evening and allowing me to come and present the audit report again this evening. Our firm name did change. On November 1st, HSMC Horizon merged into Bergen KDB. Bergen KDB is a regional CPA firm with offices in Minnesota, Iowa, and now Nebraska and Missouri. Formerly, we had offices here and in Kansas City. So that's our new firm. Same people, same service, just we're part of a bigger organization now that provides more resources and more back office and support for us to do what we do, which is work with organizations like yourselves. So what I'll do is I'll make some comments briefly through the audit. Certainly we can stop and dive into other detail. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the numbers because they're really you've all seen what the numbers were for your last fiscal year ending June 30, 2018. But our audit opinion itself is presented on pages 1 and 2. And essentially what you have, and I'll just from a theoretical standpoint, is the financial statements are your numbers, your activity. It's obvious it's your information. There's really only four pages that are ours, and that's pages 1 and 2, and then the pages at the very end where we're just opining, issuing an opinion on the accuracy and completeness of these financial statements. So pages 1 and 2 essentially say that the financial statements presented do fairly present the financial operations of the district as of June 30, 2018. It's called an unmodified opinion, same opinion you've all received in the past. As far as the financial statements themselves, rather than going through them, there are just a couple highlighted things that I'd like to point out. There's a number of different financial statements perspectives that are presented here, and if you're not in the accounting world, it's kind of hard to follow. But essentially, in pages 10 and 11 are what we call a government-wide statement. This takes a look at organization as a whole, combine everything together, one big entity. What does that mean? And then pages 12 through 20 report more detail about all the activities on a fund-by-fund basis. So overall, the district financially had a solid year. You're going to see reported in the government-wide statements that there's actually a decrease in your net assets. That's only because the transaction where you gave a $26 million facility to the city of Papillion. So aside from that, if you take that out, you actually increased your net assets, increased the value of all the property and equipment that you own, cash, receivables, everything by $14 million. So we expect that as you collect revenues, you're investing into property facilities mostly, in addition to managing the business. On a fund-by-fund basis, which doesn't include property, debt, all those kind of things, really how are you spending more of the cash? You actually received $485,000 more than you spent. So on a $30 million budget, that's what you expect. Collect $30 million, you spend $30 million, everything balances out to be the same. So the results exactly show exactly what we expect it to be. There are some adjustments that you would see in here on page 39, what we call prior period adjustments. And there's a few items there where we essentially made adjustments to the beginning of the year equity accounts. The first few of these had nothing to do with any cash or any monies the district didn't have or had. They merely had to do with an instances where we reallocated, or Carrie went and looked at the allocation of some of the engineering fees when she was getting ready to give the dam to City Papillion. Did we include all the engineering fees in that, or did we include in other things? And so there was a reallocation of some engineering fees. We modified some depreciation on some of the dam properties that were originally put in at 25 years and
change that to 50 years. And then there was one item where you purchased some land with installment notes that needed to get put on the government-wide statements, recorded asset, recorded liability. There was an adjustment for $15,000 that we had to give back to the county for an item that we have known for over 18 months or a couple of years, that the county advanced us money that we said, we really don't think this is ours, and they said, yeah, keep it. Well, finally, they came back and said, oh, yeah, you're right, somebody else was missing some money. So anyway, that's reported in here, but those are the only unusual things in the financial statements themselves. The budget compliance information is presented on 40 and on page 40, and you will see there that because of the way you budget big projects, potential projects, and so from a budgetary compliance standpoint, you're well under your authorized budget, and so that statement just shows that you're complying with the state budget compliance. There, and then following that on page 43 through 70 is all the individual funds, the water funds and related funds on those. The only thing I'll note there is that all of those funds, and this has not been the case in the past, all those funds except for the Dakota Rural Water System reported a net profit or revenues in excess expenditures. And that's not been the case. And so as we've seen these over the years continue to get better and better, I think the financial results are showing that last year proved that out, this year again showing that those systems are self-sustainable and are moving in that direction. There's only one that had a deficit in the current year. And then on the very last page is our report on internal controls compliance. So what we do for an audit is we go through a process of reporting and efficient opinion on the accuracy of this financial statement. So as part of that, we look at your internal controls and the systems in place for those controls. And what that report says is we did not identify any weaknesses in that system. We didn't really design an audit to give an opinion that we think that system is perfect, but we didn't identify any weaknesses. Same thing goes for compliance with laws and regulations. We don't specifically design tests to look where the district might not have complied with any state or federal law, but during the course of our audit, what that report says is we did not identify any items where we identified any non-compliance matters. So very good report, very, very clean report, where we didn't have any weaknesses or any non-compliance. I would like to note that part of your internal control system, there is a high level of reliance on our part by your distinguished treasurer, and certainly want to recognize his service tonight because of the work he has done over the years from our perspective, and I'm sure all of yours is just knowing that there is a separate set of eyes outside the accounting department and finance department looking, reviewing, approving these things. And without that step, there just wouldn't be enough staff internally to have a report where you don't have any internal control weaknesses. So Mr. Conley has served in that role for many years and done a fabulous job. And whoever assumes that role going forward, it is a very, very important task to continue with the level of scrutiny and review and questioning in detail that he does, so which we have relied on quite a bit. So want to certainly recognize you, Mr. Conley, for that. There's one more small report that we will issue as part of this audit. It's called a letter to governance. And what that report essentially says is that, what you're responsible for, what we're responsible for, that we didn't have any differences or disagreements with management and really, there's nothing in there other than just some housekeeping items. And attached to that is a list of all of the year-end adjustments that we proposed, that staff reviewed, and then have reported to make these financial statements complete. None of those entries are, I would call, errors. Those are entries that we've worked with Carrie to get things recorded that only affect these financial statements. They wouldn't necessarily be part of her ongoing general ledger activity for the most part. So that report is to come. It's really just more of a housekeeping. So blew through that pretty quickly, especially if you're not into this auditing stuff or financial statement stuff, but certainly wanted to present that. Appreciate your time. I'm glad to answer any questions that anyone might have.
The second part of what you've just said, will we see that?
Yes.
Another report that you
yes.
talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. I will get that. It's on my desk. I just need to finalize it. I will get it out tomorrow.
Before.
Yes.
Can I get a motion report?
I'd like to move staff recommendation.
Okay.
Is there any comment from the general public? Any comments from directors? First comment.
I'd like to, again, thank Carrie and her staff for the fine job they have done. Over the years, our audits have gone from somewhat a little bit contentious to being real, what I'd call clean, positive audits, and this is a reflection of the good work they're doing, and it's made my job much easier, and I appreciate your work. Thank you.
We all appreciate it. Thank you very much. Any other questions?
That's emotional second. No, just looking at 10 years you've been here, Carrie, and each year, I think, and especially for the new incoming director, Tim, back there, and it's, from my standpoint, too, it's been, and getting this report has been wonderful.
This is a lot easier than it used to be.
Well, and I'm trying to think who's before Carrie. I know Jack was here years ago. For those of you who weren't here when Jack was here, my God. We've improved tremendously, so thank you, Carrie, for your. And I'll be able to repeat that again Thursday, but it's good audit.
Any further comments from directors?
Director Fred Conley. Give me the motion.
I'm sorry.
You're right.
Director John Conley. Then, and then we need a second. Then. Who was the second? Okay, you still second that.
Okay. What are you doing, Fred?
I saw Conley on there.
You want to be safe?
I'm excited.
Here
I go.
Come on, Fred, get with it. Roll call, please.
John
Conley? Yes.
Reese?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Booth?
Yes.
And Jim?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gene. Thanks, Carrie.
Item number 7, review recommendation of land acquisitions to Missouri River Levy R613 through and R6616. We're going to have to go into executive.
Rich, we've got some folks that would like to provide some testimony to the board, and then if you'd let them speak, and then we can go into executive session.
Okay. Would whoever wishes to make a comment, please come forth and identify yourself.
No. Not until we go. We're gonna let them pass. No.
What's the intent? I think they're gonna negotiate with us or not.
Do they want to testify?
Yeah.
You think? I don't know.
Chris Trost.
Your addresses, please. Give us your home addresses, please.
I'll be recorded.
So I'm sorry. Okay, my address is 16505 Iskey Drive, Bellevue, Nebraska, 68123. Mine, Chris Trost, is 16711 Iskey Drive, Bellevue, Nebraska, 68123.
Hold that closer to you.
Oh. I didn't know how sensitive it was. I never was good on this. Okay.
We have parcels down on the patio and the Missouri. We're cousins. I'm just going to read the opening, and then she's going to take it from there. The parcels in question were acquired through tiresome hard work by our father and our grandfather. The lands were to be our inheritance, unencumbered. This has not been the case. This parcel of land was used for the building of the original levee. Then Highway 34 dissected the parcels, impairable damage to it as a whole. Now, some years later, we're once again being forced piecemeal the same parcels of land. This process, which included extensive hours of research, has been burdensome and frustrating as owners, as we have few choices. The land in question is not simply a tract number on paper, but is our family's past and our future. In 2010, we settled with the NDOR for the construction of Highway 34 at $8,000 an acre, star exhibit one. It's been 9 years, and land prices, especially along the Bellevue 34 corridor, are and will be at a premium. According to the Daily Nonpareil, January of 18, in reference to the levee project, quote, has been seen as a key step in protecting Offutt's runway and to preserve the possibility of developing thousands of commercial acres south of Offutt. These commercial acres referred to in this article are ours. We have at length discussed our counteroffers, taking into account the offers we have received on this land, anywhere from $16,000 to $26,000 an acre. For the property nearby, the other owners have offered their current listing prices at $28,000 to $54,000 an acre. The original purchase of the levee was flood protection, benefiting the general public, businesses, and landowners.
It was agricultural levee.
And
it was
original. Very original in 1967. The levee has evolved now to include bike trails. The levee and the bike trails, the proposed potential future bike trails, along with flood protection, provide a valuable benefit to the whole general public. The landowner would also request a benefit of being reimbursed fairly for the sacrifice regarding the continual depletion of their farmland which was used for the original levee, and more land presently being sought after for the new levee modification project. For all the above stated reasons and for the fact that we had no choice in taking our land, we are presenting our counteroffer, which we believe is reasonable and fair.
Do you have that paper that has the acreages? Of all
do
from previous, yeah.
Yes.
Did you bring that?
Yes. Oh. Pardon me for a moment.
Yeah. So part of the rub on ours is that the amount of acreage that was under the prior easement from 1967 is, I don't know how, if you guys. Are you looking at anything? Do you know what is R18 or R19 or R?
On the levee project.
Right. Oh.
Because it references back to what I was saying. The parcels have been depleted over and over and over.
So, for instance, what is considered under prior easement from 1967 for an agricultural levee is 16.
Here's National Bike. Priors were 100.
Okay. The tracks that Chris and Gail be here.
R12
on R12 on the Three River. That's just the land needed for the backside seat. Along with Papillion Creek here, this is R616, R18, and scroll, 18 and 19 are on the curve of the south side curve of the Papillion Creek. So those are the four tracks we're talking
about. Okay.
So on R18 and 19, prior easement was like about 23 acres that was never paid for, and now they're adding an additional 7, let's see, 8, 9, 10,
almost 11 acres.
Almost 11 acres to that. what we've been trying to do is I mean, we're considering the old easement for an agricultural levy, you know, that it's not that anymore. Now it's getting, you know, raised and widened and taken more land and piecemealing more of our original farm. So we see that as that current easement is kind of like null and void. It needs the new easement covering the new part and the prior. And then we feel we should have just compensation for the, you know, almost 24 acres that was taken for the levy.
Does anyone have any questions on board?
Just for clarification, thank you, Rich. The 24 acres, meaning the land that was taken years ago?
Yes,
under
in 1967.
In 67, and there was no compensation for that?
No.
Some of the owners along the required.
Well, we know exactly an adjacent one that didn't sign the easement, and so it went into condemnation, and he was paid $300 in 1967. And then again, later on in 1991, when the bike trail went in on the north side,
mm-hmm.
then property owners were bought out at that time too, and I think at $1,000 an acre in 91.
So you're saying that 24 acres back in 1967. Nobody received any compensation for it?
No.
And you said it was under condemnation?
No. No, it was just
under NDEs.
Was there any agreements as to what you were going to do or what they were going to do with it?
Well, with our grandfather.
So I know my grandfather, what he immediately did was he went out and he grazed the cattle on it. You know, he just was going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And we would put up electric fence. The problem was you can't get the fence. We put the fence up over the levee, but when you got close to the creek, you couldn't get close enough, and the cows kept getting out. So we kind of stopped doing that.
Okay. So basically you got use out of it all along, but there was no monetary money to change?
Well, that was the only use that I know of that we were getting out of it, and I don't think grandfather would have signed the easement had he known that he actually couldn't use it for anything.
Because he was told to not have the cattle.
Well, they kept getting out, and then they said, take the fence down. So, you know, it was just electric fence that was put up. I think we did that for 3 years.
Why didn't somebody come forward? That's been 40 years ago.
Well, That's why we're coming forward now, because something's happening. If there's a change going on now, the easement is being modified. I don't know how you would bring that up just out of the blue anytime during, you know, what do you say, you know, just come up and say.
Well, I know an easement, it basically just gives each party the right to access what we need to access to get in there. But it still gives you the ability or the right to use the property as long as you don't adhere to what we would need to do, correct?
And the old easement has absolutely nothing. Do you have the old?
I don't.
I didn't bring the papers because I didn't think that actually it was that we were actually going to be presenting.
Well, there's more limitations with the new easement.
The old easement has no restrictions.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it doesn't say anything. It just says the purpose of building the levee, period.
So
the new easement, and it's one paragraph.
Are you asking for anything for that 24 acres?
We are now.
Now?
Yes.
On basis of what?
The restrictions now. It says no agricultural use. There's restrictions now.
Can you still raise cattle on it?
No. We don't have cattle anymore anyway.
But you could if you did.
No.
Okay.
Because it would require a fence, and fence would be an hindrance to the operation.
Yeah, because the new easement says no fences, no No permanent anything on it. No ag. And that's why we asked about, well, what about haying it? And
so now you're looking at 24 plus the 10 for a total of 34?
Well, around there. I mean, what is this? Well, what is this figure?
Oh, there's 31.32 in priors, and they're asking for
31 acres.
That's 16, 17 in new. So total of 50 acres.
Now. 50? You know, that's an additional 26?
Right here. Total acres taken by,
That would be total after this project is done. It'd be about 47 acres. But, you know, the rub is we'd also like to get a fair to us on the new parcels of land being taken via permanent easement. One of our properties is being taken fee title to get the choice. Like, you know, iffy there. But that's kind of the rub. So in our discussion, pardon me? Okay. Oh, certainly. In looking over and talking with Marlon, talking to Paul extensively, we realized, as you said, the 40 years has been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But in lieu of getting those, we'd like to get a better price. And I know everything's all percentages, but, you know, when this whole thing started, you know, it wasn't us that wanted to give up our land. So we've been asking 12.5. That's what we think is fair. We've had written offers from 2012 to 15, anywhere from 26,000 to buy our land.
Do you have that? Do you have something to look at that shows the prices?
These are the offers.
That way we get an idea of what you're looking at.
And obviously we didn't take them. And some of the news articles, these will go with the stuff that I've given Maria.
Well, again, I guess we didn't know what
what
we were supposed to do.
Thank you.
But, you know, that's what we were being offer of 8. We were still thinking 12.5 would be fair because that's the parcel. Those are the parcels that Bellevue is hinging its whole future on.
Well, and
for development.
And we settled on 8 in 2009 when Highway 34 came across.
When NDOR took it, yeah.
Almost 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's our basis, you know, our logic, just feeling. We've done a multiple amount of research of trying to come up with that. I know it's higher than the percentages that.
Do you have did anybody do an appraisal on that for you?
We haven't had an appraisal. My dad died.
We had one in 2017.
You know, I don't doubt what you're saying. You know, I mean, the 12,000 to 16,000, but I'm just trying to figure out what basis that derives from.
That's just what the developer was willing to pay. That was going to be for Suffolk County development, and then we had another private developer wanting it for 26.
Okay, how long ago was that?
15. That one was 12. One was 12, and one was in 15. And obviously, we know you're a municipality.
We'll hear more about that when we go into that.
You know, that's just...
I'm sorry,
Nancy.
Do you have a question?
I think Thompson has his
question.
You mentioned twice agricultural levy, ag levy.
Pardon me?
You mentioned it was for an agricultural levy.
That's what the easement states.
Can you tell me what that might be? To me, a levy is a levy, but what's... Agricultural levy.
That's the language of the easement.
Okay,
an agricultural levy.
And was that with the county?
To Sarpy County.
Sarpy County.
Because I don't think...
Because we didn't exist.
You didn't exist then.
No, okay.
Yeah.
No, they're all Sarpy County.
Right. By the way, I appreciate you coming out and sharing this story.
Oh, thank you. We've just been a long road here trying to, you know, we're fighting for our... forefathers and our grandfathers, and they left it to us, so to fight. And,
well,
you know, we don't want to fight, but we would like what's fair.
For instance, on the one the furthest north, the R19, this field originally was 12.22 acres. 12 acres. That's a 12-acre parcel. So from the previous, well, we're left with 2 acres. 2 acres out of 12 acres. From the previous, the prior easement and the new easement, we're left with 2 acres out of a 12-acre field.
And that's what I want to mention, how these parcels are being decimated.
So, I mean,
that one especially, by the levy. And as landowners, I don't think anybody'd enjoy that.
Any further questions?
I just want some clarification, I guess. You said you had a legitimate offer, a signed offer from people to offering to buy this for how much?
One of them is 12 to 16, and one was 26.
For how many acres?
Not the levy land, but for the land.
Large parcel.
Yes.
And you had, and how much was that bid?
Anywhere from 12 to 26.
A signed offer.
Yeah. Well, they wanted us to sign it, but we didn't sign
it. Right. If you would have signed it, you would have sold it.
Yeah.
And when was that?
One was in 12, right after my mother passed away, probably December of 12. And I think the other one perhaps was 15.
Okay. Thank you.
And then they also have an appraisal of 12 that was done in 17.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Director. From a... Does your family or do you benefit from this project? There is that we are looking at using some of the land for the levy, but ultimately that makes the land developable from from the standpoint of having being behind those certified levies. Do you stand to benefit from this project as well?
Well, of course.
Okay. If there's enough
land left
if there's
to do
enough
anything
land left, like for that.
That little piece there is.
2 acres left in the 12-acre field, I don't know.
I guess... And roughly, and if you don't know, don't worry about it. Just percentage-wise, if the land that you have available is just taking a large percentage of it to where, yes, we're improving the saleability of the land going through this that's left, but are we taking a large percentage of that?
On some of on the one parcel between you and NDOR did, I mean, they cut our field right more than half. I mean, there's a little chunk left
right.
that goes by the levee, and now the little chunk is being lessened by more levy land. But in fact, for 3.58 acres, and it was already a little chunk because 34 cut across. So, yeah, we would benefit, but everyone's benefited from it. From bike trails on the north side that took, from my dad's field, and we've benefited a lot for the general public. I think we're just, as far as the priors, I don't know where you're going to stand on those, but as far as the new modification levy price, when you see our offers, that's where it comes from. We just believe it's fair. Do you have anything else?
Any further comments? Thank you very much for your
comments. Thank you.
Thank you. May I ask you a question? You talked about your relatives. I met a couple of the Eskies. What were your grandfather's names?
Lawrence.
And
my dad was Gail, and her dad was Don.
Okay, I did not know them. Okay.
There's quite a few around here.
Lloyd and George.
I
knew Lloyd and George.
Oh, well, yes, certainly. Okay. Yeah, we always have to be careful to say so we know we're related.
Thank you very much.
At this time, I would ask that
we go and get a motion to go into executive session for a discussion of the R613, R616 land purchase.
So move.
A second?
Second.
Roll call. And ladies and gentlemen in the audience, we will ask everyone to leave at this time.
Are we going to have any more questions after we come out of the executive session of these ladies?
Is this the last item or is this the
hell anymore? I'm waiting for work.
And you're just calling your name to both of your names, which rest of say
yes. Yeah.
And they vote yes. Vote yes right now. Tell her she needs to see you.
Yes,
yeah. Yes. We want more money.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Burgers are on.
Yeah. It's 8:47. We're going to have a motion to go back into regular session, please.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Oh, no, I can't make it. I'm not
I'll either move it or second.
I want to get this over.
I'll second John Conley's motion to come out of executive session.
Bradley?
Yes.
Luke?
Yes.
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 Would you like to read the motion?
Sure. 20 Club 4R613, Track 4. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with 20 Club Corp., a Nebraska corporation, in the amount of $5,800. For an area containing 2.346 acres of land for the Missouri River, R613, R616 levee improvement project, subject to such other terms and conditions as the general manager determines necessary and district legal counsel approves as to form. You get separate.
You
want to do them
separate? Okay. That's what we're going to do all at once.
I move a staff recommendation.
Second.
Any comments from the general public? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Salvation Army R613, Track 5B. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a permanent easement purchase agreement with Salvation Army, an Illinois nonprofit corporation, in the amount of $131,700 for an area containing 26.798 acres of land for the Missouri River, R613, R616 levee improvement project, subject to such other terms and conditions as the general manager determines necessary and district legal counsel approves as to form.
Move a staff recommendation.
Second.
Comment? Public. Roll call.
Yes.
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 Rita F. Hurlbut, Revocable Trust, dated September 27, 2004, R616, Track 3. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with Rita F. Hurlbut, Revocable Trust, dated September 27, 2004, in the amount of $62,600 for an area containing 5.607 acres of land for the Missouri River, R613, R616 levee improvement project, subject to such other terms and conditions as the general manager determines necessary and district legal counsel approves as to form.
Move with staff recommendation.
Second.
Comment?
Roll
call.
Yes.
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 Yeah.
Wendell Properties LLC, R-616, Tracks 4 and 5. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with Wendell Properties LLC, a Nebraska limited liability company, in the amount of $80,000 for an area containing 7.11 acres of land for the Missouri River, Missouri River R613, R616 levee improvement project, subject to such other terms and conditions as the general manager determines necessary and district legal counsel approves as to form.
Move the staff recommendation.
Second.
Comments from public? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yeah.
BCR Properties Limited Partnership, R616, Track 6 and 7. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with BCR Properties Limited Partnership, a Nebraska Limited Partnership, in the amount of $34,000 for an area containing 3.192 acres of land for the Missouri River R613, R616 levee improvement project, subject to such other terms and conditions as the general manager determines necessary and district legal counsel approves as to form.
Move a staff recommendation.
Second.
Comments? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Jason Hagen, R616, Track 8. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with Jason Hagen in the amount of $24,000 for an area containing 2.024 acres of land for the Missouri River R613, R616 levee improvement project, subject to such other terms and conditions as the general manager determines necessary and district legal counsel approves as to form.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Comments? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yeah.
Dow Grain Company, Inc. et al., R616, Track 35. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with Dow Grain Company, Inc. et al. In the amount of $41,000 for an area containing 0.0833 acres of land for the Missouri River R613, R616 levee improvement project, subject to such other terms and conditions as the general manager determines necessary and district legal counsel approves as to form.
Move with staff recommendation.
Second.
Comments?
I got a question. I've got a question. Is that 0.833 acres?
It is.
Yes.
For $41,000?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Roll call, please.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Condemnation filings for the Missouri River R613, R616 levee improvement project. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board to authorize district legal counsel to initiate the filing of a petition in the County Court of Sarpy County, Nebraska, on behalf of the district pursuant to the procedures governing eminent domain provided by Nebraska Revised Statute Section 76-701 at sequence for the appointment of appraisers to ascertain and determine the damages that will be sustained by the following landowners: PCS Nitrogen Fertilizer LP-Nutrien Limited, R-613, Tracks 6 and 7, PCS Nitrogen Fertilizer LP-Nutrien Limited, R-613, Track 8, Farmer's Daughter, LLC, R-613, Tracks 12 and 16, Horse Creek Farms, LLC, R-613, Track 15, 1904 Farms, LLC, R-613, Tracks 18, 19, Pete Ciasio, R-613, Tracks 29 and 30, Paddington Wilson, LLC, R-616, Track 9, Eric S. Dawson, R-616, Tracks 13 through 15, from the district's acquisition of the necessary land rights for the Missouri River R613, R616 levy improvement project.
Move with staff recommendation.
Second.
Comments? Roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yeah. That concludes it. Moving on. Thank you, everybody. Moving on to agenda item number 8, renewed recommendation of expense claim reimbursement for Director Brunroll. Director Brunroll,
please. Mr. Chairman, I'll be brief.
Thank you.
Why not? There are issues with board policy and procedures. I have documentation to support my claims. The chairman, not yourself, Chairman Thompson, and others fail to follow proper board procedures, causing errors all over the place. These are violations of state and federal statute. This is why this must be discussed in front of, or excuse me, this is why this must be discussed in a full board meeting and not some subcommittee. Not all board members attend subcommittee meetings. Full board participation is needed to ensure that we're all starting in the same place. That way, board members can say they don't know what's going on. We're all in the same boat here. The chairman and others do not have the authority they claim. This is not found in board policy and procedures. Examples, the agenda. They're making stuff up. They're telling others what they must follow and what they proclaim, all the while doing what they wish. This is usurping board power. I look forward to a calm and civil discussion with fellow board members on my primary standalone item on Thursday.
The only question, I have a question. Now, this issue continues to come up because we put it on the table some months ago. Is this the same? Are we talking about the same thing?
I don't know. I don't know what the motion is.
You don't know what?
I don't know what the motion is.
Have you tabled it? I think I remember.
No, sir.
It was tabled. It's not taken off the table. It died. So it's considered by the board.
It needs to be put on the agenda?
That's why it's at the subcommittee. Per board policy, it goes to the subcommittee. It has all recommendations.
And there needs to be a motion and an approval of that motion by the subcommittee to move it to.
That's why it's here.
This pertains to the business of the board. I am a board member. This goes directly to the board, so we can all discuss it.
Mr. Grunewald, you don't have the authority to say it goes to the board.
I am a board member of same right.
Let me finish. Okay. Chairman of the subcommittee determines, because it's on the agenda, where it goes from here. If it's only for discussion, it doesn't go anywhere.
That is wrong.
I'm just telling you what it's going to be. Now, you may not agree with it. You may not like it. But if there's no recommendation from the subcommittee, it does not get discussed at the full board meeting.
Sir, this pertains to violations of federal and state law. Of course that belongs to the board.
This is the governing body we're talking about.
Okay. I made my point.
Okay, we're going to have the fellow chair to make a motion to not.
I'm not making a motion.
You're not on the subject.
Okay, if there's no motion, there's no discussion Thursday evening. So the issue dies. And so at this point, I rule the motion or your conversation over, and no report will be given to the board in regards to your comment.
And I disagree. Respectfully,
sir. Okay. That's my ruling. Any further business to be done, Director Thompson?
Well, before you adjourn, again, there's if any of the subcommittee members want to make a motion, so it does get to the board, they can.
Yeah.
So I'm suggesting that whoever is subcommittee, not Fred, because you're not on the committee.
I'm not making a motion. I want to be clear about. Since the board laid it on the table, you're saying for it to come back to the board, it has to be recommended by a subcommittee.
That's a moot point.
When it goes on the table and it goes to the next meeting,
okay.
Everybody brings it up, takes it off the table.
Okay.
The motion.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, it has to go back.
Oh, okay. I got you.
And if there's no action in the subcommittee, then there's no action.
We stand adjourned. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.